Good morning, everyone. We're continuing our weekly shiur on Hilchot Lashon Hara. We finished last week the halachas concerning the introduction on all the lavim, all the transgressions that a person does when he speaks Lashon Hara. And today we're going to go on and we're going to speak about all the positive commandments, the asin, that a person is actually, he is not committing and is not fulfilling his duty by speaking Lashon Hara. The first one, says the Chofetz Chaim, is Zechirat Maase Miriam. We have a specific commandment from the Torah to remember what happened to Miriam HaNeviah. Zachor et asher asa Hashem Elokecha leMiriam baderech betzetchem miMitzrayim. You need to remember what Hashem did to Miriam HaNeviah on your way as you left Egypt. What happened to Miriam? What was the whole story? Miriam HaNeviah spoke to her brother Aharon after they realized that Moshe Rabbeinu was not living with his wife anymore, because Moshe Rabbeinu was speaking constantly to Hashem, and he decided to live separately from his wife. So they started speaking about him, and what they said about him is they compared him to the rest of the Nevi'im. They didn't say anything bad about Moshe Rabbeinu. And Miriam HaNeviah was his older sister, and she was a tzaddikist, and she was a prophet, and she's the one who saved his life, and she's the one who brought him when he was young and he was a baby in the hands of Bitya Bat Paro. She made sure that it would be his mother that would nurse him. And of course, Miriam didn't mean at all to upset Moshe. And this was a private conversation between Miriam and between Aharon. And more so, Moshe Rabbeinu was such a humble person. The Torah says, Ve'aish Moshe anav me'od mikol ha'adam asher apnei ha'adama. Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't care less whether Miriam was speaking about him or whether she wasn't speaking about him. And all those things together didn't help Miriam. She was punished for speaking Lashon Hara on Moshe Rabbeinu. And she was punished with Tzara'at. And she had to wait for 7 days, and all of Am Yisrael knew this. Can you imagine what a humiliation? This wasn't even a private issue. It's not as if she was in her tent and no one knew. All of Am Yisrael knew that Miriam HaNeviah spoke Lashon Hara, that Miriam HaNeviah had Tzara'at, and that Miriam HaNeviah was secluded for 7 days outside Machne Yisrael, and everyone had to wait for her. Imagine the humiliation. That's what's called humiliation galore. I heard once from one of Rabbonim, what will happen in Olam Haba? And he said in Olam Haba, the whole event of the court case, the judgment and the penalty is all at once. What happens? You sit at this massive, big theater hall. All your friends, all your acquaintances, all your family are all sitting with you. And on the big screen, they're projecting your life with everything that you did, with all your thoughts, with everything that you hid from other people, what you thought no one was looking. And he said, that is the judgment and that is the penalty all together at once. You don't need to be punished after that, because the humiliation of everyone seeing what you thought and what you did, Hashem could help us. So that's what happened to Miriam HaNeviah. We have a commandment remembering what Hashem did to Miriam for speaking Lashon Hara. So a person who speaks Lashon Hara is showing he doesn't even care about what happened to Miriam. He doesn't care that Hashem says, constantly remember what happened to Miriam HaNeviah. That's the first asse that he's canceling. The second asse, says the Chofetz Chaim, Ve'avta le'reacha kamocha. We have a commandment to love our fellow Jew just like we love ourselves. Would you want someone else to speak Lashon Hara about you? To disgrace you, to humiliate you, to tarnish your name? No one would want that. By you speaking about someone else, you're showing that you don't care about him. You don't love him as much as you love yourself. Because what you'd want to happen to you, you'd never want to happen to someone else. The Gemara says in Masechet Shabbos, we have Baruch Hashem here, lots of nice music from the outside. It's very good. This is a time where, we need good music. They're probably now going to the down south. They're going to strengthen the Jews who are there, having unfortunately, who have got to suffer from all the missile bombings. So Baruch Hashem, we're also part of the mitzvah. The Gemara says in Masechet Shabbos on the 31st page that a goy came to Moshe Rabbeinu, just came to Hillel and Shammai, and he said, please, I want to go through the whole process of Giyur, but I want you to teach me everything while I'm standing on one leg. In other words, he was obviously someone who fell through a time tunnel and came from the 21st century, and he wants instant Yiddishkeit. That's what he wants, instant food, instant everything. I want instant Yiddishkeit. Give me the code. One sentence. He came to Shammai. Shammai said to him, you know, please stop talking nonsense. I don't have time for people like you. Go away. He came to Hillel. Hillel said, okay, stand on one foot. You know, okay. He's standing. Okay, now listen very carefully. Man desani alach la ta'avid lechavach. What you hate and you don't want to be done to you, don't do to your friend. That's the whole Torah. Ve'idach pirushahi. All the other is just the interpretation of what that means. Zil gmor, go learn. Finished. You got instant Torah. Said the Mefarshim, Hillel actually said to him, ve'avta l'reacha kamocha. He just rephrased it on the negative way. Ve'avta l'reacha kamocha is a positive phrasing. What you want to be done for yourself, do to your friend. Hillel phrased it in a negative phrasing. What you don't want to be done to you, what you hate, if it would be done to you, don't do that to your fellow Jew. So a person who speaks Lashon Hara is obviously showing he doesn't care about this commandment. Because just like you wouldn't want anyone to speak Lashon Hara about him, oh, I'm special. I am unique. Everyone's got to treat me differently. So I heard this once from one of my rabbis, which is a very good thing. He said, you show someone here a big picture, a joint picture of, let's say, a picture of his school, his whole school, his whole class, his whole group of friends. What's the first thing a person looks for in every single picture? Himself. Okay? That's the first thing he looks. And what's the second thing that... That's the first thing that a man looks for in a picture. What's the first thing that a woman looks for in a picture? What was she wearing? Okay? That's a big difference. The Gemara says that women... The Gemara says in Moed Katan, in Daf Teta Mubes, for women it's very important what they wear. So, we have a Gemara. That's the reality. Third commandment, a third mitzvah's assay, the Chofetz Chaim says that a person who speaks Lashon Hara is actually, he is showing that he is completely disregarding this commandment, is Betzedek Tishpot Amitecha. We have a commandment to rightfully judge our fellow Jew, which means when we see something that can be interpreted either in a positive or a negative way, we have a commandment to interpret it in a positive way. Always think good of our fellow Jew. Unless you know positively that what he did is something bad, that what he did is something negative, you have to what's called ladun lekaf zchut. The Gemara gives an example. The Gemara says in Maseches Shabbos, on the 127th page, the Gemara there gives a story which in Shuta Ramami Pano, in Siman Samech Gimel, he says this wasn't a regular story. This was a story that happened with Rabbi Akiva before he started learning Torah, and with one of his rabbis, Rabbi Eliezer ben Hawkins. Before Rabbi Akiva was 40 and he learned Torah, he was still a very righteous and hard-working man. He went to work as a helper to Rabbi Eliezer ben Hawkins for 3 years. 3 long years where Rabbi Akiva was out of his house, where Rabbi Akiva did not get to see his family, where Rabbi Akiva was hoping at the end to get a very nice sum of money for 3 years of hard work to be able to support his family for the next years. After 3 years, it was Erev Yom Kippur. He comes to Rabbi Eliezer ben Hawkins, who's a very rich man, and he says to him, please, Rabbi, I finished my 3 years term. I'd like to get paid. Can you give me money? And Rabbi Eliezer ben Hawkins, sitting on his manager's chair in his very big and luxurious mansion, filled with expensive furniture, pictures, Van Gogh on the wall, okay, Rembrandt at the side, all these other interesting things, he says, I'm really sorry, I don't have any cash to pay you. Okay, so Rabbi Akiva says to him, okay, you don't have any cash, can you give me some, I don't know, some jewelry, something that I can sell it? I'm really sorry, I don't have any jewelry. Rabbi Akiva looks right, and he sees these incredible orchards outside the window. He looks left, and he sees on the sides, I think, these Fabergé eggs, you know. A whole display of each one is worth about, what, $20,000, $30,000? And he says, okay, can you give me something? He says, I'm really sorry, I have nothing to give you. Now, your initial reaction, if that's what would happen with your boss, would be, you liar! I mean, you revolting, despicable liar. I mean, what do you mean you don't have anything? Look at your house, look at what you're sitting on. Your chair is worth more than 3 years' salary. Rabbi Akiva said nothing. He went home, and all the way long he was trying to justify Rabbi Eliezer ben Hawkins. After Sukkot, and you can imagine what kind of chag they had in their family, going away for 3 years and coming back with nothing, nothing. It wasn't a very good chag, I assume. After Sukkot, he suddenly sees Rabbi Eliezer ben Hawkins walking with 3 big donkeys. One of them is filled with clothes, the other one is filled with expensive utensils for the house, and the third one has got all these expensive delicacies, except for cash, hard cash money that he's giving him a salary with. And he says to him, listen, please tell me the truth. When I said to you I didn't have any money to pay you, what did you think of me? You probably thought, oh, what a stinking liar. Is that true? Rabbi Akiva said, no. I thought that maybe you dedicated all your property to Hashem. And since you dedicated it to Hashem, none of it was yours. You couldn't give me anything. He said, you can't believe how right you are. I have a son. His name is Hyrcanus. He's called after my father. And my son, unfortunately, is not sitting learning Torah. And I vowed that he will not get a penny from my money, because all my money is now going to go to Beis HaMikdash. And only when I went to my friends, the rabbis down south, were they able to cancel my vow, because they said it is important, nevertheless, whether he learns or not, don't send him away. Don't cause a ridge, or don't cause a, what's the word? A rift between you and your son. You're very right. When you came to me to ask me for money, nothing was mine. Nothing was mine. I couldn't give you anything. That's what's called kaf zchut. Looking at him in a positive way. Judging him righteously. We have a commandment to judge a person righteously. When we speak Lashon Hara about someone, we're not judging him righteously. For example, I now go and I speak about someone who, in my opinion, is a very well-off person. We'll call him for the sake of it. We'll call him Mr. Cohen. And I say, you know, can't believe that, Mr. Cohen. I'm telling you, you know, I went to ask him for tzedakah. The guy's a rich guy. Do you know what he gave me? He gave me a shekel. A shekel. That's a disgrace. A shekel. This is obviously not doing the tzedakah the way he should. That's 100% Lashon Hara, and I'm not judging him righteously. Do I know what Mr. Cohen's going through? Do I know whether he does have money or doesn't have money? It's an external impression that I think that he's rich. Maybe he's not rich. Maybe he's poor. Maybe he's even poorer than I am. He doesn't even have a shekel. Maybe a second before I came to him, someone else came to him and he gave him all his money. All he was left with is a shekel that he could give me. We have a commandment to judge our fellow Jew righteously. Look at him in a positive way. Try and interpret all his actions in a positive way. And a person who speaks Lashon Hara is definitely not doing that. So that's another commandment that he is disregarding. The third one, the fourth, says the Chofetz Chaim, V'chei achicha imach. We have a commandment to help our fellow Jew to sustain himself from the financial point of view. We have an obligation to help him stand on his own two feet financially. We have an obligation, this is a halachic obligation, that if we have money and he comes to us and asks us, could you please give me a loan, I need this money to open a business. The Rambam says that's the highest level of tzedakah, to give him a loan to help him stand on his own two feet. Because you're preventing him from reaching a situation where he will be poor, he'll need tzedakah money. You're helping him be self-supportive. That's the highest mitzvah. We have a mitzvah to help our fellow Jew be able to sustain himself financially. When we speak Lashon Hara, many times we are hurting him from the financial aspect. Imagine if I now go and tell you on a certain broker, okay? Now I'm assuming everyone here has a very, very big investment case, or investment file. We're all multimillionaires. We all have a broker who sits on Wall Street. And imagine if I go and tell you that your broker is an idiot. He's an idiot. I don't think he's very clever. Would you want to have a broker who's not very clever? Well, if I had money to invest with a broker, I think I'd prefer to go to a clever broker. If I said to you that your lawyer is not very sophisticated, he's a bit of a simpleton, would you want a lawyer who's a simpleton? No. Many times when we speak Lashon Hara, we are hurting the person who we speak on. We're speaking about him financially. Story, this is a true story. I had a friend who worked in a business. And one day he made a mistake. It happens, you work in a business, he gave a receipt, he made a mistake. The sum of money was less than what he should have given. It was a mistake, a natural thing that happens. The guy that came into him decided that he was a thief, that he was a liar, and he made sure to tell everyone not to go and buy from him because he's not honest. Eventually the shop was closed because he lost a lot of money. Clients stopped coming. That's mamash, ruining a Jew's panosa. When we speak Lashon Hara, we've got to think about the fact, are we hurting his panosa or not? If you, for example, are a Sofer Stam, you deal with Kedusha, and I go tell someone, well, I saw him davening and... okay. You know, or I don't let my son play with his son. I don't want to say why, no. No, I'm a tzaddik, I don't say. That's Lashon Hara. would you want your tefillin and mezuzahs to be written by someone who doesn't daven properly, or who people don't want to send their kids to play with his son? You know, our minds start thinking, okay, oh my gosh, I mean, who knows what he does then? That is v'chei achicha imach. Next commandment, says the Chofetz Chaim, hocheach tocheach et amitecha. We have a positive commandment to rebuke our fellow Jew when he does something wrong. When you speak Lashon Hora, not only are you not rebuking him and giving him toichecha, you're doing exactly the opposite. What are you doing? Toichecha means you've got to go and try and tell him what you did is something wrong. You know, you've got to try and fix your ways. When I speak Lashon Hora about him, did I try to speak to him before? So I just now cancel another mitzvah. Now, we've got to be very careful with this mitzvah of toichecha, because toichecha is a very dangerous mitzvah. It's like a two-edged sword. Be careful. If you don't know how to use it properly, you'll cut yourself. Why? The Gemara says in Erechin, on the 15th page, on the second side, the Gemara there says two sayings about toichecha. Saying number one, in the name of Rabbi Yoshua, there's no one in this generation who can accept toichecha. We, unfortunately, are all extreme mental defects. We really are. We all have issues with our self-confidence. And whenever we hear the smallest amount of criticism, what do we do? Okay. And the best defense is offense. How dare you say that about me? Me, York, I'm going to show you. No, we're all like that. We are also sensitive and vulnerable. And this is not just in our generation. The Gemara says this was in her generation. In the generation of the Tanoim, Rabbi Yoshua says, you can't rebuke anyone. He is mentally unable to hear any toichecha. More so, the Gemara says, in this generation, there's no one who can say toichecha. Why? You have to know how to say it. You have to say it in a nice, gentle way. You have to be a person who you yourself represent what you're saying. I was once in the Gan here of Azeh Habira. And I hear this father, he's going to his son. He's going, Shloimi, how dare you hit your brother? We don't hit in our family. Whacking him in his face in front of everyone. Oh, that was wonderful, Chinuch. That was such a good example. You know, don't hit. But what did I do? You just whacked him. And you hear those parents who are saying, Shloimi, how are you talking? You vile creature, you foul mouth. You're telling him not to curse and yourself for using language that you wouldn't want him to use. So the Gemara says, this is not something in our generation. This is the time that happened in the Gemara's generation. There's also no one who can tell Toichecha. More so, the Gemara says in Yevamos, on the 65th page, the Gemara says that just like there's a commandment of saying something when a person can hear, we also have a mitzvah, and some say an obligation, not to say anything when we think that he's unable to hear that. And the Meiri there says, this is talking about the mitzvah of Toichecha. When you go to someone who you know that he will not hear what you've got to say, that he will start mocking you, that he won't accept it, you are not allowed to say a word. Halachically, you're not allowed to say. And there's so many criteria for Toichecha. First criteria. Criteria number one is that the person who gives Toichecha must know how to say it. Okay, for example, if you see someone talking in shul, going up to him and saying to him out loud, shut your mouth. That's not good. That's embarrassing and humiliating in front of the whole shul. That's not the way you should give toichecha. I mean, toichecha, you have to know how to say it. Gently, at the side, in a mechubedik way, speaking about the action, not about the person. Second thing, says the Kli Yakar, what's the pasuk that comes right after hocheach tocheach et amitecha velo tisa alav chet? Do you know what pasuk it is? Ve'avta l'reacha kamocha. Says the Kli Yakar, why does that pasuk of you should love your fellow Jew come after the pasuk of toichecha? Simple. You can't give toichecha unless you really love him. If you don't love him the way you love yourself, you can't give toichecha. Okay, who here loves the one sitting next to him just like he loves herself? Please don't all lift your hands up at once. See the problem? None of us love the guy who's sitting next to us the way we love ourselves. We can't say toichecha. Next, says the Kli Yakar, there are three groups of people which you can't say them toichecha at all. And the gematria is the gematria of Rechil. Reish kaf lamed. Reish reshaim kaf ksilim. Stupid people. Lamed leitzim. Clowns. You can't say them toichecha. These are psukim in Mishlei. Al tochach letz penis la'eka. Hochach la'rasham umo. ולכסיל על יומר, these are all psukim. You can't say toichecha to certain people. Fourth thing the Ramchal says, a person who says toichecha has also got to know where is the place to say toichecha. For example, imagine if I am now sitting here, okay, giving you a shir, and someone gives me a cup of water and I drink and I forget to say a bracha. And someone comes up to me and he says, Rabbi, with no disrespect, you forgot to bench. This is not the place to say to him that I forgot to bench. He's embarrassing me in front of all of you. You have to be clever enough and acute enough and sensitive. What's called to have, we know we have intelligence, there's IQ and there's also EQ. You've got to have the emotional intelligence. You've got to be empathic. You've got to be full of love. Okay, which one of us here has those conditions? Okay, who doesn't? Very good. We can't give toichecha. It's a reality. So I'm just saying, even though there's a mitzvah which we're not doing by when we hear someone saying Lashon Hara, we should know the mitzvah of toichecha is very, very, very sensitive. And who is the one person which we must never, ever, ever give toichecha to, even if we have all these wonderful qualities? Very good. Your wife. You never give toichecha to your wife. Do you know why? This is a natural thing. The wife is unable to accept toichecha from her husband. I'll tell you a story. This happens to me. This happened to Rav Mordechai Eliyahu Zecher Tzadik Livracha. My wife, Baruch Hashem, is a Talmid Chacham. She really does. She knows halacha unbelievably. When we have a halachic argument, and she says to me, and I say to her, you know, you've got to do A, she will not accept it, because I said it. At the beginning, when I was married, I mean, I couldn't get it. I said to my wife, I don't understand. I said, you know I'm a rabbi, you know I learned, you know I know the halacha, why can't you accept it? She had no answer. Okay, so I went to speak about it to Rav Mordechai Eliyahu. And Rav Eliyahu said, why are you getting upset? This happened to me also. My wife... I said to him, Rabbi, what's the solution? He said, I'm going to tell you the trick. He said, when you say to your wife something, never say it in your name. Open a book. She's got no problem hearing it from a book. Hearing it from you, oh no, sir. I won't accept it. So that's the thing. And he said to me, unbelievable, it works unbelievably. I never ever say to my wife, what's my opinion? She says something, I said to her, 1 second, let me open. I said, the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch writes, and he writes differently. Fine, the Kitzur, no problem, because the Kitzur wasn't married to her and she's not living with him, so she can accept what the Kitzur says. But if you say it to her, oh no. So we've got to be very careful about this mitzvah of toichecha. Don't misuse it, be very careful. Remember again, the biggest rule that we have in Yiddishkeit is when in doubt, don't. Better. It's better for you to refrain from taking an action when you're in doubt whether it's something positive or negative than doing something that you might jeopardize your olam haba. Hurting a fellow Jew is one of the worst things that's possible. You're not so sure whether this is the good or the best thing to do, keep your mouth shut. Much, much easier, much safer for our olam haba. When in doubt, don't. Simple rule in Yiddishkeit. The phrasing in the Gemara's language sounds better. Shev ve'al ta'aseh adif. Sit and don't do is preferable. Next thing says the Chofetz Chaim. Uvo tidbak. We have a mitzvah of trying to become as closest to Hashem as we can. Now the Gemara in Ketubos on the 111th page asks Akasha, how can you, uvo tidbak, it means that I am supposed to cling myself. I am supposed to become closer to Hashem. I am supposed to be one with Hashem. How can you become one with Hashem? Hashem is fire. Ki Hashem Elokecha Esh Ochlahu. How can you become closer to Hashem? This is a mitzvah. I am supposed now to go and be close to Hashem. It's not real. How can you be close to Hashem? You can't even look at Hashem. Become close to Him. Says the Gemara, be close to the Talmidei Chachomim. Those who represent the word of Hashem on this world, be close to them. What does that mean? If you've got parnasa, you want to give tzedakah to them. If you have a business and you know that one of them, for example, deals in import and export, do parnasa with a Talmid Chacham. You want to marry off your son and your daughter, try and marry them off with a son or a daughter of a Talmid Chacham. When you sit with them. When you want to go daven, daven in their shul. When you want to have friends come over to do a siyum, for example, in your house, invite them. Do everything in your power to become as closest to Talmidei Chachamim as you can. A person who goes and speaks Lashon Hara is definitely not becoming close to Talmidei Chachamim. Because normally, and I'm saying normally, unfortunately, because we have also got to amend this very much, Most Talmidei Chachamim try and refrain from speaking Lashon Hara. When you go speak Lashon Hara with other people, you're going far away from the Talmidei Chachamim. You're actually distancing yourself. When does this happen? Example, this is a very common thing that happens every single day in every single shul. In most shuls between Mincha and Ma'ariv, unless there's Sfadi shuls, we'd have them together, between Mincha and Ma'ariv there's a short shir given by the Rav. You can either sit at the side, learn. There's also the famous parliament that meets outside while the Rav is giving a shir and speaks about everything that is happening in the world, out the world, beyond the world, under the world, everything they should speak. And normally this parliament is not exactly speaking Divrei Torah. I mean, they're not going here on a halachic debate. You know, what would be the din if a missile would be flying on Shabbos? Are you allowed to do Chilul Shabbos Drabanan D'oraisa? They're normally speaking Lashon Hara and politics and election. And every person has got this suffix every single time between Mincha and Ma'ariv. What do I do? Where do I go? Do I stay here for the Shia of the Rav? Or do I go out and speak to the parliament? Because being in the parliament is interesting. Oh, I will know everything that happened in the neighborhood over the past 24 hours. Who married who kicked out, who got angry, who shouted, who has a debt in the makolet that hasn't paid it yet. And if you make the wrong choice and you go outside to the parliament to speak with them, you just now cancel the mitzvah of Voitid Bak. We have a mitzvah of being as close to Talmidei Chachamim as we can. This is a mitzvah paskan the Shulchan Aruch. We have a mitzvah of sitting in shul hearing the shir. And instead of that, you're doing vice versa. You're going to hear the parliament speaking all their Lashon Hara and gossip outside. Another mitzvah. Another mitzvah says the Chofetz Chaim, Umikdashi tirau. And if a person speaks Lashon Hara in a yeshiva, in a Beis Midrash, or in a shul, we have a specific commandment, Paskan the Shulchan Aruch, in Siman Kuf Nun Aleph 151, of respecting and fearing the house of Hashem. This is the house of Hashem. This is a place dedicated for Torah, for Avodas Hashem. A person who speaks Lashon Hara, can you imagine now? Just imagine if you now had an invitation. Let's think of one of the most despicable kings that probably lived over the past 50 generations. Okay, I'm trying to think of someone. Well, the Queen of England doesn't cut it because he doesn't really have any power, but let's, for example, say that you were invited to Saddam Hussein in Mahshmo's palace. Okay? You'd be sitting there like this. You know, when you're talking to him, you'd have to like grasp your hands or something just so you don't shake. You'd be petrified. Why? Because if you said the wrong thing, it would be off with her head. He'd kill you. Point blank. A person who goes now, imagine if you had now a meeting with Obama. I agree, not the best thing in the world, but okay, that's what Hashem destined for you. You can have a meeting with Obama. You would sit there, respectfully. You'd be afraid. He is. We have to respect him. This is also halacha. He is the president of the most powerful state in the world. He is today the strongest person in the world. You'd sit there with awe, with respect. You wouldn't suddenly, as Obama, one sec, Mr. President, my wife is calling me on the cell phone. Wait a sec. Yes, darling. No, I can't buy eggs right now. Oh, yeah, no problem. I'll talk to you later. Put it back in. Mikdashi tirau. That's the way we're supposed to feel. In a shul, in a Beis Midrash. Hashem is here with us. Feel the awe. Feel His presence. Feel the respect. Speaking Lashon Hara? In Hashem's shul? When Hashem has got specific commandments about how you're forbidden to do that? What you're doing is you're spitting in Hashem's face. That's what you're doing. Would you now go sit in the police station where there's a big sign there saying you're not allowed to smoke? Take out a cigarette. Oh. A person who does that is crazy. I mean, in a police station against what the police are saying? It's the same thing in a shul. Umikdashi tirau. Now I'd like to read you a part of the Zohar, of what the Zohar writes about a person who speaks in shul. And the Zohar writes like this, says the Zohar. This is the Zohar on Pasos Truma, on the 131st page. He who speaks in a shul, things that are not Divrei Kodesh. Notice, he's not speaking even about things you're not allowed to speak. You're just speaking about what is the situation in the stock market, the Nasdaq. What's happening there? Okay? Says the Zohar. Vailei de'achzei peruda. Woe unto him, because he is actually separating the Kedusha from the Shul. Vailei degara mehemnuta. he is showing that he does not believe in Hashem. Vailei delet lechulaka belahad Yisrael. Oh, unto him, because he is showing that he has got no part in Hashem. He's holding a big sign. Hello, I'm a Catholic Christian. I'm Reformed. I don't believe in Hashem. That's what the Zohar says about a person who speaks things that are not kedusha in a shul. Kal v'chomer, a person who speaks things that are forbidden to speak in a shul. Rabbi Yonatan Ivershitz, he has a whole drush. He has a book called Ya'arot Dvash. That book, Ya'arot Dvash, or drushim, that he gave all his years in Prague. On the first part there, at the end of the ninth drush, it was a drush that he gave that a new shul was built. He gives a moshel, just so we can understand. Imagine if you just now, you formed, okay, you're all living in one neighborhood, and you formed a new shul, which would be called the Chut Shel Chesed English-speaking community shul. You renovated it. You painted it. You invested lots and lots of money in making the shul the most beautiful place that you can. A guy comes in, into your shul, is eating a pizza. Okay, he's finished half of it, and then he takes the pizza and just goes onto the wall, smears it on the wall, and walks out. Your reaction would be, get him now! That would be your reaction. You chutzpah upon him! How dare you dirty the walls of our new shul, smearing the ends of your pizza on our shul? In a normal house, you wouldn't do that. And in a shul, in a house that's meant for Hashem? Says Rabbi Yonatan Ivershitz, when you sit in a shul, and you're speaking things you shouldn't speak, that's what you're doing. You're soiling Hashem's shul. You're throwing dirt on Hashem's floor, on Hashem's shul. It's exactly the same thing. There's no difference between someone who comes. Imagine if I took a cup of coffee and I just poured it here and just walked out. What would you think? That's despicable. I mean, even in your own house, you wouldn't do that. Says Rabbi Yonatan Ivershitz, there's no difference between doing that and speaking Lashon Hara and Rechilas and things you shouldn't do in a shul. Imagine, for example, okay, may never happen. Imagine if you would hear someone is sitting in the shul, he's taking out his computer, his iPhone, and he is showing a dirty film inside the shul. Your reaction would be, okay, he'd have to run. The question is, who would get him first? Now, something would be ripped off. What is it, a leg? Is it an arm? Is it a head? That depends on who's chasing him. Would any one of you be willing for someone to sit in your shul, even not a dirty film? He's now watching a sports game in the middle of the shul. What would you say? You chutzpah upon him, get out of the shul now. And if you wouldn't get out, you lift him up and kick him from all the stairs. There's no difference between that and sitting and speaking Lashon Hara in a shul. No difference. That is the same disrespect towards Hashem. So says the Chofetz Chaim, he who speaks things that he should not speak in a shul, he is tarnishing Hashem's shul, tarnishing Hashem's house. He's showing that he does not respect Hashem. He does not fear Hashem. He does not believe that Hashem is here in this house. From his point of view, Hashem is not here. In other words, say the Poskim, he is showing that he is a non-believer. Can you see how bad it can get just from speaking Lashon Hara inside a shul? Heavens forbid. The last commandment, and that actually we're going to keep for next time, because that is a long issue that we've got to speak about. So for the time being, we're finished. We have now a quarter of an hour of free questions. So anyone who wants to ask something, either about the Shia or about any halachic issue, please feel free. We're also heading here and addressing our viewers on the internet. If you have any questions you want to send to us, please write to us. Our email address is breslev@breslev.co.il. Any questions, comments, or ideas, please. Yes. A question here was asked, where do you draw the line about between Azus to Kedusha and offending someone? The question relates to a Torah given in Nikutei Moharan, in Torah Reish Ayin Aleph, 271, where Rabbi Nachman says there that a person has to have the meter of Azus to Kedusha. He has to be able to know, not to be chutzpidik, but to be assertive and not to be afraid in order to obtain what he wants to in Kedusha. And the question is, where is the thin line? And it's a good question. It is really a thin line. If you, for example, come to your Rav and you say to him, you are going to teach me now, now, you move out of here and oy vav what I want to do to you. That's chutzpah. But if you go to him, Rabbi, please, I want to learn with you. Rabbi, I'm going to follow you. I'm going to come with you. I'm going to sit outside your doorstep until you agree to teach me. That's not being chutzpah. You're showing respect. You're speaking to him in a proper manner. The line is a very fine line. And when in doubt, don't. Okay, someone's doing something that's a bit... The question is, let's explain a bit further. I see someone sitting in shul, opening his laptop and watching inside a shul. He is watching a football game inside a shul. Now, he's got to be thrown out of the shul. There's no question about it. The laptop has got to be closed. And the question is, where do I go over the line? And here is a rule that I heard from Rav Mordechai Eliyahu Zecher Tzadik Livracha, which I think is a very fundamental rule in everything ben adam lechaveiro. Always speak about the action. Never speak about the person. It's also a rule in chinuch. When I go to someone who's now watching a football game inside a shul, I have two ways of addressing it. I can either go to them and say, you vile person, you despicable koifer, you. Or I can speak about the action, not saying a word about him. How can a film be watched inside a shul, inside of a holy place? How can there be such disrespect by a film being viewed here? There are no films allowed. Please close the laptop and go out. I'm not speaking about the person. But this is also a very important rule that all the great mechanachim say about chinuch. And many times we make this mistake with our kids. One of our kids did something that he shouldn't do. Let's say, for example, he lied. He stole. There are two ways of addressing it. I can speak about the action. I can speak about the kid. I can speak about the action. How bad it is to steal. How bad it is to lie. How the Torah speaks negatively about those two things. Or I can speak about him. You are a thief. You are a liar. That's the worst thing to do in chinuch. Because once you speak about the person, you're labeling him. And many times labeling him, it's caused what's called in psychology, you're imprinting something in his soul. He comes to believe that he is a thief, he's a liar, and he will behave accordingly. Never speak about the person, speak about the action. Person's watching a film, you speak about how severe it is to watch a film inside the shul, it's not acceptable. No way. He's got to close his computer and leave out. You don't speak about the person. You don't insult him. You don't make rude comments to him. If he is so chutzpahdik that he's not willing to get up, you take three guys, you lift his chair up, and you take him outside of shul. And if he tries to hit you, then in that case, you're allowed to defend yourself. But that normally doesn't happen. People are not that obtuse. Yes?
Does Rosh Hashanah have to be through speaking, or can it also be through deeds?
The question is, can Lashon Hara be through, is it only through speaking or also through deeds? We're going to learn about that when we get to the halachic part of our shiurim. Lashon Hara has got nothing to do with speech. For example, if I go to you and I say to you, tell me, what do you think about Rabbi Cohen? And you go, know that? That means he's cuckoo. You didn't say a word. You simply used your hand. That is Lashon Hara from Doraisa. It makes no difference whether you speak or whether you don't speak. And it's a midrash. We bring the midrash. It's in the midrash Tanchuma Pashas Maseh. When we learn it, we'll bring it. It's a maaseh learned from Yoav ben Tzuria. Lashon Hara is any way that you imply something which is degrading about someone else or causing him any damage, whether it's by writing, by speaking, by a hint, even by refraining from answering, that's Lashon Hara. For example, if I go to you and you say, isn't Rabbi Cohen a great Talmid Chacham and a Baal Midas? And you say, no response. That's Lashon Hara. You didn't say anything. You refrained from taking action. That's Lashon Hara from Doraisa, because that is actually saying, no, he isn't.
You mentioned a voted back. Let's say there are five rabbis in my Beit Knesset, and I invite only four of them over and over to my house for Kiddush. Is it Lashon Hara that I'm not inviting them?
Good question. You have five rabbis in your shul, so first of all, I must say that I feel extremely sorry for you for being in a shul with five rabbis, because that must be very difficult. I'm saying, you had five rabbis in your shul, you invite four of them, one you don't invite. Now the question is, how do you react when someone asks him? By not inviting him, I'd like to invite people who I can connect to on a personal and on an emotional level. If I ask you, why don't you invite the fifth rabbi? And you say to me, listen, he is a wonderful Talmid Chacham, we just, on a personal basis, we just I find it difficult to speak to him. There's nothing wrong with saying that. That's natural. There's some people you can relate to, some people you can't. But if you say, I'd rather not answer that question, that's Lashon Hara. Because what are you implying? Oh, I have some juicy things that I'd like to tell you about him, but I'm a tzaddik, so I'm not going to say anything. That's Lashon Hara. So the question is, how do you react? By not inviting him, you're entitled to invite whoever you want. Again, in my opinion, if that's the situation, I would invite also the fifth rabbi, simply not to cause anyone in shul to think that maybe something is wrong with him. It's very important to keep the covet of Arabonim, because if you do not keep the covet of your rav, you might ruin the whole shul. So much so, one of the things that bothers me very much today, when I was a child, this was the chinuch that we got, and I got from my parents. Now maybe this is the English chinuch, I don't know. There was no such thing as davening in shul where there's a rabbi, whether it was shachris, mincha mariv, and leaving the shul without going to the rabbi and shaking his hand and saying to him, Shalom Aleichem, good afternoon, good morning, good evening. You don't have to say anything to him. He is the rav of the shul. You come in, you say Shalom Aleichem to the rav. You leave, even if it's after mincha, you say Shalom Aleichem to the rav. And this is the chinuch that's got to be given to young children to learn to respect their rabbis. Among the Sfarim, it's even better. There's no such thing as going into a shul, dinner shul, without kissing the rav's hand. And this teaches the child. There's a rav. He is the spiritual leader. We have to accept what he says. So even though you don't have to invite the fifth rabbi, I would invite him nevertheless. Just to respect his position. Any other questions? Yes?
Due to circumstances, I found myself this last Shabbos in a shul I went to God, and it was very, very noisy in the year, in the hot floor. One of them was a social hour almost. So I was, normally I was shush people, but I didn't. But before that, what
good question here. A good question. A person davened in a shul which unfortunately people are not makbid not to speak through Kriyas HaTorah and Haftorah. And while they were saying the Haftorah, people were speaking and disturbing. What should be the reaction? I'm going to tell you something that I personally do and something that I saw from my rabbis. And this is, I very much try, even though I have here koilel and it is my job and I can't refrain from doing that, outside the koilel, I never ever make a comment. I try not to make a comment to no one. No one. The damage that you can have by making a comment or by even saying shush to some people is 10 times worse than just accepting this as Hashem's will. If you were now, okay, Rav Ovadia, or if you, Rav Yoshiv, one of the Gedolei Yisrael, and you would say shush, everyone would go home. Okay, no. Since we are just normal people, normally when we say to someone shush and rebuking them, that immediately causes from them to, what is the word? Objection. They object to what we're doing and they start fighting with us. It's not worth it. It's not worth it. I'll give you a story. 3 or 4 days ago, I was standing in line in the bank. Someone comes past, stands in front of me. Now there are 5 people behind. Now, I must say, I was really rushed. And I didn't know what to do. I didn't say a word. And you know something? Someone else behind me, he took care of the problem. It's not worth saying anything. It's not worth it. If this is what Hashem wants, then Hashem wants him to stand in front of you. It won't help. And it's better for you not to be the one rebuking someone else, because it will only cause friction and conflict. The Chofetz Chaim brings a midrash that he who manages to keep his mouth shut, he gets a socher or a ganuz shen kol b'riya v'b'riya yecholim lesha'er. When he dies, he will get this cherished light that no creation can even imagine how special and unique it is. Yes?
It's on the same page, but in terms of the oven, you have someone who's not reading words. It's impossible that he can daven.
And he's the chazan. Okay, what do you do? Good question. Someone is davening with a chazan, and we are talking about someone who has taken 4 or 5 speed pills, and he is running the davening. I mean, we all unfortunately know this. What do you do? Simple. You go davening in a different shul. You don't say to him anything. It is not your job. There's a phrase in called the Mukhiach Bashar. He who rebukes people standing at the gate of town and telling everyone. You know those people? There's some people who think it's their job to fix the world. And all they do all day is say, you're doing this and you're doing that and you do this and you do that. People hate them. Not only that, when people hate them, but when something happens to them, everyone is really happy. No one wants to hear these things. The best thing, why should you be in charge of it? There's a gabbai. It's the gabbai's responsibility. If the gabbai says nothing and you make a comment, you're just going to cause unnecessary friction between you, the chazan, and the gabbai. There's a gabbai that's going to say, excuse me, who are you? Go away, don't daven here. The best thing, you don't like something, when in doubt, don't. Just refrain. Just go daven a different shul. You can't daven a different shul? Say to Hashem, Hashem, listen, I'm really trying to do your will. I want to daven properly. This is the chazan you want me to have. Fine. What can I do? Last question. Yes. Oh. Now the question about tochacha is what happens when the wife says to her something, you should do this, you should do that. Okay, there are two ways of answering it. The Rosh Yeshiva Shlitzer, Rav Arush, writes in his book, Begana Shalom, that a person should know that the woman is a mirror of the man. She is actually relaying what Hashem wants to say in her own words. So when you hear it and you object it, you're actually objecting to what Hashem is saying to you. Now, in order to obtain that level, one has to have a certain level of emunah. A, you've got to believe that the wife, yes, as we really wrote this sentence, vox populi, vox dei, the voice of the population is the voice of the God. You've got to believe that the voice of your wife is the voice of Hashem. And you've also got to be humble enough to accept what she's saying. Even if you are not at that level, and you can't hear what she's saying, and you want to say something back to her in retaliation, only retaliate about what she is saying, not about her. Most people do that mistake when they get into personal friction. They always speak about the person. How dare you say that to me? And you did that last week, and you're like this, and your mother, and your father, and your brothers, and your sisters, and then, oh. And then what happens is that 2 weeks later, we see him in the jewelry shop, buying her this massive, massive diamond necklace and earrings because he's really got to compensate this massive big fight that he caused. Even if you feel that you have to retaliate and that you can't control yourself, and again, it's not preferable, only speak about the action. You can say to her, why are you saying that? Why are you saying that? Listen, I can hear what you're saying. Please, it's difficult for me to understand this. I don't understand. Let's think about this. Let's speak about this calmly. Or, I disagree with what you're saying. I don't think that I'm like that. I don't think this, I don't speak about the person. Again, the best thing to do is to be quiet. Let's put it this way. If you were the perfect husband, your wife wouldn't say anything. Let's put it this way. If you were the perfect husband, your wife wouldn't say anything. And if she says something, that means you're still not the perfect husband. Rabbi Maimon, you're supposed to start at 12:30? Oh, we have here time for one more question. Yes. Okay, yes.
First one is just one more question. Your theme always is if you have a doubt, leave it out. If you're not sure that you can put it across well, then don't. And yet, in your example of the Beit Knesset, we kind of, somebody's watching a game in Beit Knesset, maybe he's off by himself, but he's watching a game on a laptop. Your tonic there, your solution.
I'm saying that one should take action.
Yeah.
So why?
Okay, so that's a little bit in contrast to the other example that you give in most cases of kind of the gentle. So my approach, if you were asking me what I would do, is I might say to the person, oh, what's the score? And sit down with them and watch for 30 seconds or whatever and say, you know, they really kind of clown on this in this place. Maybe you didn't know it, but maybe to win your brother over is the point, not to throw him out.
The question is here, why do we say that in certain cases we need to take action, in certain times we need to refrain from action? First of all, in the example that I gave about someone watching a soccer game, I'm not talking about someone who you can see that is a complete person of what's called far out, who doesn't realize at all this is a shul. That person, there's nothing to tell him off or scream about him. I'm talking about someone who you can see that he knows and is doing it out of disrespect. Why do we need to take actions? Most times, we don't have to take an action, but there are situations where we can't just sit back. Okay, for example, imagine if now someone comes to your father as you're walking to him in the streets and just in front of you whacks him in the face. sorry, Daddy. The Rav told me, refrain from action, cope on your own. What do you mean cope on my own? I'm 80 years old, I'm walking here with a stick. Sorry, I can't do anything. When we feel that someone is really hurting us on a personal level, that someone is insulting us, we need to take action. When it hurts, one should shout. There's a lovely story about that. The Hasidim tell the story that once upon a time, someone came. He came to the house of the Rav on Erev Shabbos. He got stuck, and he had a purse of money. He gave him the purse of money so the Rav should keep it till Motzei Shabbos. During the Shabbos, he sees the Rav is davening, and he's shouting, and he's davening, and he's out loud. And he goes to him, Rabbi, why do you shout? Daven nicely. Speak normally. Okay, the Rav said nothing. Motzei Shabbos, he comes to him and says, can I please have my purse? He says, no, sorry. What are you talking about? What do you mean, Rabbi? I gave you $10,000 in hard cash. No, you didn't. Rabbi, give me my money back! And he says to him, excuse me, why are you shouting? Speak nicely. So he says to him, Rabbi, when it hurts, one shouts. Rabbi says to him, you got the point. When it hurts, one shouts. When someone hurts your father or your son or your wife, it hurts, so you shout. If someone is hurting Hashem and his shul, it should hurt you, and you should shout. And if it doesn't hurt you, you should shout that it doesn't hurt you. Most situations, things that don't hurt you, don't shout. Thank you very much. Bezrat Hashem, we'll be meeting again next Thursday, 11:30. I hope this time we'll be punctual and on time. I'm sorry again, this was something that was not related to me. Bezrat Hashem, we'll meet again next Thursday. We'll continue our shira on Hilchos Lashon Hara. Thank you very much. We'd like now please to welcome Rabbi Nasan Maimon for his lesson at 12:30.